This is SMC. If it's about school marketing and communications, you'll find it here. It's Insight Applied. And now, here's Brad and Scully.
Hello, school marketers, and welcome to SMC. If it's about school marketing and communications, we'll talk about it here. I'm Brad Entwistle, and this is episode 117 for Wednesday, October 18, 2017. And Scully, we're back on opposite sides of the country. How are you?
Yep, I'm in fine fettle, thank you. I'm ready to go. Queenstown was great, but Western Australia's magnificent.
Well, to all of our clients and friends in the Emerald Isle at the moment, hope you're cleaning up okay after the recent big storm. It's in the best traditions of the area. I think it should be known as the Great Storm of 17.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
And now to news that you can use. And our first item is how publishers and marketers can make content king again. And this is Jeff Pundick, who is a fellow and advisory board member at the Conference Board and is brought to us by the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. The basis of the article is that he's saying 5 or 6 years ago, a lot of people were suggesting every brand should be acting like a publisher. And I've got to say, we were one of them. We absolutely support that. But he approaches the article from a really interesting point about trust and transparency and how people, our parents in schools, are placing more of a premium on transparency. And from the publish versus marketing point of view, so whether are you a publisher or a marketing point of view, we thought as soon as you start to overlay schools as publishers of particularly your school newsletter, it applies to so many things, but just think about this in terms of your school newsletter. He makes the point the long-term survivors will be those who best serve their readers, not their advertisers. Again, overlay this into a school context, and is your school newsletter being marketing-driven? In other words, you're always trying to sell points of view or sell events, and it's lots of positive encouragement and marketing speak, or are you actually building trust and being the voice? Scully, what did you think of what Mr. Pundick had to say?
I thought it was great and very shrewd, and I love how it's applied to school marketing. You've got the gnashing of teeth going on in the big marketing world and the big publishing world, and all the ducks are getting in a line because in school land, it's what we've been doing all along. It's about building trust. The long-term survivors will be those who best serve their readers, not their advertisers. That's your community at school. It's easy to publish. Now, publishing isn't necessarily just printed matter. Publishing is the content we're putting out there, but it's hard to build a trusted relationship. Now, I challenge every school, you have to have a trusted relationship with your community. And if you don't, that's the place to start to build from. So you are ahead of the curve. Forget Coca-Cola. They're trying so hard to be seen as being the trusted player to their community, obviously a slightly different scale community than your average school, but
they're trying to be what schools are.
Exactly. You've got an existing community. It's not always that easy to think like a publisher though, because people very often they're driven by revenue. And I think marketers often go, well, if we're going to be a proper publisher, we need to look at how we can do revenue. Your revenue stream, our revenue stream in school land is enrollments. It might be alumni, it might be fundraising, there might be various things going on. But you need to make sure everything goes through the optic of credibility. You've already got credibility, but every piece of content you produce is to further enhance that credibility. And how do you do that? Think of it, the best publishing is a service. Okay? It's not just a marketing piece. Yes, it will have its objective as one of your marketing objectives, but think of it, you're servicing your public, your readers, your consumers, your families, your community, basically.
Well, I love one of the points where he says, what's harder than acting like a publisher, however, is thinking like a publisher. Marketers have largely applied an advertising mindset to content where they speak of campaigns and measure success through reach rather than focusing on establishing their credibility over time. Now, I read that and I thought, these big consumer brands are desperately, desperately wanting and prepared to throw all sorts of money at achieving what schools have naturally had, but which schools don't value anywhere near as much as they should.
Yeah, you've got to develop your sort of direct relationship with your community. Don't just rely, I mean, your word of mouth is powerful, but talk straight to them. as an individual. Put yourself in the position of each member of your community and what is it they need to know? And that's the content that people want. Now, content is king, all this marketing speak. It's really about servicing your community, your public. And you do that by all sorts of methods. So again, publishing is many things. I still challenge them. I think we said this not too many episodes ago. The printed word is still alive and well. It still does a job. Mm. In fact, in some respects, it's so retro, it's cool again. The publishing print, where appropriate, can work very hard, but it's part of a marketing mix that's important. Some of the brands are reversing in back from digital into the virtual world, into the real world by printing. And now, you've been doing that for a long time, and don't just throw the baby out with the bathwater, because printed matter can work, but it's part of a marketing mix and knowing your community and knowing what's most effective.
Now, a few points that he makes very rapidly. You can go to the show notes, get the link for the article. But he says, focus on your most committed supporters. Of course, he's talking to large groups here, so schools, that's parents. Commitment can be a two-way street. Tone matters. I'll read you the quote that I've got highlighted. The more human the voice, a voice that acknowledges its biases, the more inviting it becomes. So that's, that reality, that gritty humanness. Your school newsletter shouldn't be clinically clean.
Not at all. Your school's been chosen for a reason. It may be geographical, it may be faith-based, whatever it is. So stand for what you are and speak with that personality. And transparency can be a bit uncomfortable sometimes, but be that. If you're going to build credibility, you've got to be honest. And credibility is your key goal. Get it right. Work on that transparency, honesty, and the gritty voice of the people.
He winds up by saying that when a reader puts a brand on their very short list of trusted partners, now for you, just think parents, your wider community, alumni, your brand, your school can move out of the consideration based on price and specs and into that rarefied world of being a true partner. Now that, I believe, is what every school earnestly seeks, to be that true partner with parents. We all naturally go there, but how often do we say it like that? How often do we say, marketing, school marketing, we want to partner with your parents. We want to represent the school in a way that is partnering. And before we move on, Scully, any wind-up thoughts on?
Just one other point he makes. It's a long-term investment. Your relationship with your community is a long-term investment, and how you communicate with them is a long-term investment. It's not just a quick smash and grab. Think long-term, because that's how you'll get the most effective results.
Okay, to news item number two, which is an opinion piece by Georgina Rutherford, who's the head of communications at IMA. And it's why micro-influencers are, quote, major engagers. Now, this article follows the idea that we're all now talking about influencer marketing, and that influencer marketing is great, good concept, but really within smaller markets, the influencers are disproportionately more powerful. And again, when you read this with your school marketing hat on, Scully, well, they've coined a whole new name for the influencers, which, well, in the big business, an influencer in a smaller market is called a micro-influencer, but they've come up with this new term, major engagers.
Yeah, and they talk about micro-engagers later as well. Look, it's all the rage, all the marketing speak is about influencers and now engagers. What are, you know, for those who not across the jargon, think Kim Kardashian.
Oh, that's really?
That for some
you've
people
taken us to a new depth.
For some people, she is a major influencer. For others, she's a major disinfluencer. Have I just invented a word? De-influencer.
I can hear podcasts being stopped all around the world right now.
But it's powerful stuff. Now, what's happening and why massive brands and makeup companies or whatever are desperate to tap into these people churning out content is because they have a following. The beauty is, once again, the world actually revolves around school marketing, but only we realize that, because this lends itself so well. You have got, within your school community and within your school, whether it be the staff, whether it be your students, you have got influencers, you've got community leaders, you've got top sportsmen, you've got a geography teacher who's a wonderful example of pastoral care leading thinking. You've got all sorts of wise people speaking on various topics. So use them, because you within your community. You don't need to influence people in Las Vegas. You don't need to influence them anywhere other than your region, but do it well. And you can do that by the, I guess you'd call them the micro-influencing, micro-engagers, whatever they are members of your community or people that could impact that. They may be speaking about mental health with students. They may, you may bring them, they may have a reputation, perhaps from the local university, or but they can come and add their influence and speak within your community. And the benefit with social media particularly is that they can share the fact that you are leading thinkers and have just a wealth of knowledge on so many different topics. It lends itself, this whole influencer engaging lends itself so well to school marketing.
I'll leave that one there. It's worth going to the show notes, having a read of the article, and I promise Kardashian is not mentioned in the article. Scully took us there to news item number three. And this is the highbrow. This is the meat. We'll see if Scully can get beer or Kardashians into this one. However,
Is that a challenge?
No, it is definitely not a challenge. Titled, What to Consider When It's Time for New Marketing Technology. And this is by Marcia Reefer-Johnson, who is the Managing Editor of Content Strategy at Content Marketing Institute. There's a mouthful. Now, the real great thing about this article, and it almost seems to be undercooking it a bit to call it an article, is that this is a real how-to guide, not too long, about how to think about when you're going through the process of implementing new marketing technology. So the reality is that marketing technology, or MarTech for short, has absolutely taken off. It is gone ballistic. There's a wonderful set of infographics produced by Chief MarTech Officer where they map the number of actual marketing technology software offerings over the years. And I think it's now over 6 years, it's moved from like 300 to in excess of 5,000 in 75 different categories. The field is just going ballistic. Now, as school marketers, we can't possibly hope to know what is going on, which ones are appropriate to us all the time. And in fact, one of the things that I've noted, and I know Scully, you've noted as well, we've commented on, in fact, it's one of the things behind the impetus for the School Marketing Institute, is that schools find it very hard to go through the process, select a marketing technology, implement it, integrate it with their workflows. And then by the time they get there, frankly, the world has moved on and it's either been superseded or there's a new offering that does it better.
And you know why that is?
Why is that?
Because they didn't prioritize people or the process. It was all about the technology.
You're following the show notes. I thought you were going to make some Kardashian reference. So yes, prioritizing people and process over technology. And I think, well, Scully, you go there. The idea that the need to fix the process issues before moving on to new MarTech tools.
Totally. Start with the solution, what it is you want to achieve before retrofitting a piece of technology that looks whiz-bang, but it's not about the technology, it's about providing what it is you need to do to make your job easier. Now, you may have IT departments browbeating you within an inch of your life to take X or Y because it fits their budget or it does all sorts of things. It integrates better with something else. It has to work for your process to achieve your marketing communication objective. Now, if you don't do that, I promise you can have massive, massive misery for years. It's putting the technology first, which is crazy. Work out what it is you want to achieve but try and do it in the most simple way possible with fewer touch points. Otherwise, once central administrative factors come to play, it can become difficult and counterproductive to what you're trying to achieve.
So just if you're struggling to understand what we're talking about here before process, before the technology, here's an example, a quote from the article. And this is an example from the commercial world. One company bought a tool, staffed up, hired an integrator, did all the things they should do along the way. And after a year, quote, we realized, wow, we're still churning out all those email newsletters, batch and blasting. We had ported our email service provider into a marketing automation system. We fell into that trap of using old processes in a new tool rather than using the new tool the way it should be used. That is not looking at your processes before you move on to a new technology. We sit back and we go, oh, of course, but that is so easy to do. I've done it. I know. I've got the war wounds to show that it's really easy to put in a new technology just to replicate what you're already doing.
Yeah. And look, and having said all of this, don't be scared off by it, because the right technology can make your life so much easier.
Absolutely.
At the central point, it can make you look smart. It can halve your work time, or enable you to free you up to concentrate on other things, because the automation can be fantastic. But work out what it is you want to achieve with it. Otherwise, you can disappear down some cul-de-sac and wonder what's going on.
And now, as you've already alluded to, her second point, her major second point, is to seek as simple a solution as possible. Indeed, one that may not even actually use a technology. It's possible that things might need technology to make them happen. And the third one, and this is probably one, well, we won't spend a heck of a lot of time on it, but ask questions from multiple perspectives. If you need to know what you're getting into and look at this new tech from all sorts of different angles. And she actually really gives quite a few suggested questions to ask. And so to the conclusion, she says, when it's time to consider a new marketing technology, the first thing to do has nothing to do with technology. Assess your processes and address any issues you can. So it could be when you address those issues, actually, you don't need the new tech. When you're ready to research your marketing technology options, seek the simplest solution possible and spend some time asking those questions. Don't automatically go with the top vendor in the industry or the most expensive. It's about finding the fit that's right for your school. So I think that is a cracker of an article, and we really recommend, if you're anywhere near thinking about a new marketing technology, have a read. And as mentioned there, you know, start thinking about it 12 months out, because if you're going to examine all your systems and processes, you might need that time to investigate every option fully.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
And now to our sponsor for this episode of School Marketing and Communications, and of course, brought to you by School Marketing Institute. Now, if you're looking to clarify your strategy, powerfully articulate your messaging, and integrate it all with a suite of industrial strength digital tools, then it's time you got a personal introduction to Image 7's School Marketing Institute. But before you go, have a listen to Peter Moulds, principal of Bishop Tyrrell Anglican School in Newcastle.
I'm an educationalist. Yeah. I have a lot of experience in terms of teaching and learning and focusing on kids. I have a good understanding of finances. I don't know a lot of what's best in terms of how best to market a school, both inbound and outbound. Yeah. I have some wonderful, passionate staff that believe in the school, believe in the vision, but they also don't have that type of experience, and the SMI gives us the chance of getting some mentoring to build the capacity within my own staff from people that actually have that experience and have that knowledge for a very cost-effective price for us.
And that's Peter Moulds. And if you'd like to find out more, you can visit image7.com.au/SMI. New members, we are limiting it to one a week. So if it sounds like you'd benefit, visit image7.com.au/SMI and book your introduction.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
And now, as has become our custom, we're one of the team from Image 7 is going to talk to us about things communication. And this episode, we're talking tweets with John Ilsden. John, how are you?
Going well, thanks, Brad. How are you going?
Good, good. Now, Scully's already taken us down into the basement with Kardashian references, so we're talking tweets. Gentlemen, no unnecessary references to Donald Trump.
Well, it seems to work for President Trump, doesn't it? But the question, to tweet or not to tweet, is it even relevant? What's the main use of Twitter, and really should a school even bother?
Yeah, it's a fair question, Scully. Twitter is not quite as common in schools as Facebook, but it's definitely still a helpful social media that schools can use to get out quick messages, reminders of dates, share students' work, that sort of thing.
Okay. I guess it's about whether the audience actually has it. So, I mean, we know that a lot of parents and the community are on Facebook. How is it different to Facebook?
Yeah, so Facebook is more about sharing larger things, possibly more formal, that's a way to say it. Basically, you could use Facebook to exchange files with your parents, set up parent groups, or maybe a group for certain class sizes if a teacher wants to do that. But with Twitter, really, it's just about that quick sharing, building relationships with your parents. You could link relevant content to them, share your own content, maybe your own blog or podcast. You can do this on Facebook as well, but it's good for Twitter. Maybe have a class hashtag and just send out quick, short messages with reminders and or work or stuff like that.
Okay. So let's assume we've bitten the bullet. We decide Twitter is the one for us or one of the solutions for us. How do you actually get found? Because you're up against so many other voices on Twitter. How would you let your community know that you're tweeting?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the two main ways you go about doing that is by using hashtags and getting retweets. So a hashtag is sort of like a keyword that you would link to your tweet. You would put maybe hashtag school assembly or hashtag private schooling Australia or something like that. And that is going to help you get found within that area on Twitter and within those groups. Retweeting is basically like a share on Facebook. So a retweet will happen if maybe one of your followers will retweet you and then they will share your tweet with their followers and it can go on like that. And then you can build new followers from those two things.
Okay. So I remember the dark ages when Twitter was just a few words and a certain number of symbols, but now it appears you can use all sorts of pictures and images and all sorts of things. How do you use visual content to it?
Yeah, visual content is a great way to get more engagement and be found more quickly on Twitter. I would suggest linking images with your posts, maybe infographics, short videos even. Images of your students' schoolwork can be great because parents will love to see their kids, you know, doing something good. Obviously, check with all your guidelines and permissions for that before you do that. But yeah, visual content is definitely more engaging and I would definitely suggest that you use some form of visual content.
Okay, awesome. So how often should I do that? Very often or not very often?
More often than Facebook, I would say. 3 to 4 times a week is probably a safe bet for a school. Some even daily. You'll find big companies will do it often daily, but it's probably not necessary for your school.
Brilliant. Twitter it is. So it works for some. And I think in terms of your voice of authority, you'll get a good following, certainly from the principal. So look forward to seeing those tweets. Let us know your thoughts.
Thanks, guys.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
And now to our marketing example for the week. And Scully, after having given you heaps, I note that you've kept it close to home and we haven't gone to South America for obscure beer brand marketing examples.
No, this time what we've done is actually look at a utility. In this case, it's Western Power, one of the energy suppliers over here in Western Australia. But what they've done is clever because it's a fairly dull concept, to be honest with you, power sharing. And what they've done is bring it to life, the concept of that, and whilst also branding their organization as forward thinking. Really, it's a good example. Really good example. They've got 3 videos where they humanize the concept of power sharing by scanning over roofs and talking about the relationship between 2 or 3 people in different streets. Now, the relationship in this case, there may be a few bit of innuendo, is ultimately about the fact that one of them is a giver because they collect through solar, they collect energy, and then it's shared into the grid. So it's not a brand new concept, but it's brought to life very simply by using, case studies, I suppose, human beings. People like to hear and read about people. So in terms of schools, I think it's a great way that you could pick what is, after all, on the surface, not always that interesting, but that's the human element that makes it very exciting because people love to hear about people, particularly students, particularly success stories or case studies that are relevant to them.
Well, when I first looked at this, I thought, well, when you overlay school marketing on top of this, you go, well, yep, a school is from the outside. If you're not incredibly interested with a school is a school is a school. And the same with electricity. Absolutely nothing different about electricity. The electricity that you get out of your PowerPoint is the same that I get out of mine. What product differentiation is there? And yet we know intrinsically that behind that utility, there is a whole bunch of technology and wonderfulness and management and all sorts of things that make it different, just like there is in a school. Here, separated by good storytelling, the brand has come to the fore and some real lessons there to be taken on board for schools.
Yeah, have a look at the three videos. They're excellent.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
And now to Rant and Raves, where it's the Scully show today, because Scully has a rant where he's going to give away a brickbat or a bouquet. Declare your hand. Is it a rant or a rave?
It's a rant. I got irritated as I read this.
All right, stand back. Go for it. Rant. You've got 120 seconds. Go.
The Ehrenberg Bass Institute released its latest report claiming big brands are not dying. But this article flip-flopped. That's the only way I can think of it. It's an English phrase, flip-flop. Couldn't make its mind up. It said some made some points and then promptly contradicted them so as not to alienate anybody. And therefore, it was one statement after another, caveat, contradicting the other. Now, what did I like about it? Not a lot, other than it said that there's some local brands, namely schools, as a classic local brand, who are doing a great job fighting these behemoths out there who in the marketing landscape are taking over the world. But they're doing it by trying to look local. They're doing it by incorporating the local image through digital technology. Don't lose your place at the heart of your local community. This guy couldn't make it work out if he was trying to say one thing or the other. So don't get swept away by people that don't have an opinion. Stand by your brand, stand by your school. You are right at the heart of the community and you will see out any global challenges.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
And that rant from Scully almost brings us to the end of episode 117 of SMC. Now, if you're listening from the Image 7 website, you can pop over now to your favourite podcast player for your fortnightly dose of school marketing and communications goodness. Just search for SMC, School Marketing and Communications. You will absolutely then find us. Now, if you've got some questions, comments, a marketing example, a rant or a rave, you can email us at SMC. We love to get your emails and your communications, smc@image7.com.au. And that's it for this episode of SMC. From Andrew and myself, Brad Entwistle. Bye for now.
Goodbye.